Hi, everybody, and welcome to, yes, another edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. I'm Bob Page, sitting in for Eli, who is off today, and Fred Heumann is taking his place. As always, the great Danny McLean is with us, and Brandon McAfee is our producer and our engineer. And just before we started going a second ago, Fred said something interesting. As we record this Friday morning, he said he was up until 2 o'clock watching baseball. Freddie, I did the reverse. I was in bed by 10. I got up at 4 o'clock Friday morning, and I'm watching my recordings of baseball. Isn't everybody else out there watching 8 hours of baseball every day, two games every day? Is it out of control or what? Even given the fact that we know this is a bastardized season.
I'm old school, and I'm an old school baseball guy. A couple weeks ago, when they had 8 games on, I watched 5 of them. What I do to speed up the game, and I understand the criticism of I'm okay with baseball games, even with all the delays, but I'd avoid them because I tape all these games. I don't want you.
Yeah, of course, we've talked about that. Yeah,
so I start like 10 o'clock. And I zip through all the commercials. I zip through all the pitching changes and all the visits to the mound. And then I can watch a game in less than 2 hours. So I did that with both games last night. I didn't start watching until 10, even though they started at 6. So it's a way to speed up the game for me. And I really don't miss anything doing it that way. And I enjoy the commentary. I enjoy all the insight. But I skip some of it to get through.
Absolutely.
The game.
Danny, what are you doing? Brandon, what are you doing? First, how much baseball are you actually watching? And are you guys recording too?
Well, I'm not recording, but I'm watching the ball games. I mean, the Astros.
You're watching the commercials then, right? You're watching them live?
You know, I don't do much commercial watching. I got other things I can do, too. And but, you know, these games are pretty good, except for a blowout here or there. And, you know, just like yesterday before he hit the home run.
Thursday,
He took two high curveballs. I think he could have hit either one of those out of the ballpark, too.
Carlos Correa.
Yeah, Correa. And he hit out of the universe. And by the way, what he told Dusty was, "I'm going to end this. I've had enough."
Yeah, he did.
He said, "I told you I'm going to bleeping end this game."
You know what drove me crazy? Did you see what he did though? He hits the home run. Now he's rounded third base. He's on, and he cups his hand to his ear to listen to the applause from the cardboard fans in the seats.
I thought you were going to talk about him standing there watching the ball go out of the ballpark. It was like a 3 or 4 curtain call, for God's sake.
Yeah, in your day, had a guy, you know, done something like that, the next time you would have faced him, he would have been on his ass with the first pitch. What is it with these kids? They're showing up pitchers. They're showing up teams. You hit a home run. Just have some sportsmanship. Act like you've done it before.
Well, I firmly believe now the way they all act when they hit a home run is they're not doing it on the pitcher. They're not doing it against the pitcher. I really thought at one time they were just trying to show up the pitcher all the time.
Yeah.
But they aren't. This is just a part of the game now. This is a part of the – this is like the NFL when they go into their dances and what have you. Right. So baseball's got their own dance, though.
I'm with you, Danny, and I was slow to move this way, Bob. I've been like you. I've been like – act like you've done it before. There's no reason to hot dog. But I've kind of accepted now that, like in basketball, every dunk is celebrated.
Yeah.
Like in the NFL, a guy knocks down a pass, Jets knocks down a third down pass, and he's up and he's pounding his chest and he's celebrating and he's putting – he's cupping his hand by his ear. Baseball's criticism is that young people don't like the game because it's so blah and bland. I do think I've really come around it. Even the kid shortstop, the superstar from San Diego.
Tatis.
Fernando Tatis. Okay. He's a wonderful player. Yeah, he's a hot dog in old school standards. But I think people have gravitated to like this stuff because it shows baseball players are human beings, and it's not, as Dennis directed at the other team, it's not directed at the pitcher. Yeah, in the old days, he'd sit on his butt the next time, and pitchers hit back then, and it was a different era and a different way. So I have slowly, very slowly, come to accept this behavior as part of the game.
Oh, okay, how about this? Okay, fine.
And he won a game, Bob. He won a game. Yeah, that's a little different than hitting one in the second inning.
Then, Denny, how about this? A lot of times we see pitchers who strike out a hitter in a key situation, 3-2, bases loaded to win a game, and they're pumped up. The concomitant would be here that after a pitcher makes a pitch like that, he throws his glove on the ground or flips it up in the air and starts dancing and leaping around. We ain't seeing that.
Yeah, we
do. So I'm suggesting, too, it's not the same. We don't see the same kind of demonstrations.
We don't have the same kind of demo, but we've had the demos by the pitchers. There's no question about it.
Well, it happened last week in the series of the Dodgers and the Padres. And the irony of that is the guy who was hacked off was Manny Machado. He starts yelling and bleep you at the pitcher. But earlier in the game, Machado hit a monster home run and didn't flip his bat. He threw his bat.
It's ridiculous.
Like a javelin. And he got mad when the other pitcher did the kind of celebrating. Again, I look at that game. It was played all day the next day on every network. It brings attention to baseball. I don't have to love it, but I've accepted it as part of the game, and it has made it a little more exciting. And I'm reluctant to go there, Bob, because I was with you.
Yeah, Brandon, you seem to like it, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, why not? These guys are actually showing a little bit of flair. They're showing a little bit of attitude. And you know what? The biggest player right now in baseball is Mike Trout, but no one talks about Mike Trout because he's buried away over in L.A. and not the good L.A. team.
They ain't playing, too.
Exactly. Well, he's, you know, he performs well, but he's boring,
right?
In a sense. Now, what he's not
K-Line.
Bringing
he's K-Line.
He's not bringing the kids K-Line. To the game. Yeah. So what's happening is you're seeing these Fernando Tatises, and you're seeing, you know, these bat flips in the what's the pitcher with the Reds? Trevor Bauer. He's the one who wants. He's actually telling his opponents to bat flip me if you take me deep. And it's just bringing a little, you know, an actual personality.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because you're a lot younger than we are. The way we were raised, old school, was to respect your opponent because you may win this battle, but the next battle probably going to go to him. And I'm just not seeing that. And I understand maybe I'm a dinosaur and the game has changed, but I don't like it. And I'm sorry. I don't like it. I'm not used to it.
Well, sooner or later, I think we're going to see maybe a little bit of the NFL. Maybe they'll form a circle and do a dance. I mean,
well, we've been seeing that for years.
In any sport that can happen now. I mean, I'm waiting for the first time that to happen. It's going to be like a team like the Oakland A's or the New York Yankees or somebody like that with some pizzazz. But I'll tell you, it's just around the corner. Because it's the way these guys hit the home runs, I've never seen so many home runs in my life.
You're right. It's another point, but it's
and strikeouts, obviously.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we'll get to that. But that's just to follow up on Denny's point. That's a difference in eras. If Ditt Butkus were on the field and these kids started jumping around back in the day and doing bowling pins and all this stuff, he wouldn't wait until the next series. He'd walk over there and flatten them right now, hit him right in the face mask. I have no question about that, but it's a different era, and same in the NFL. I hated the celebrations at first. You know, I appreciated Billy White Shoes Johnson, who kind of started this stuff way back when. Yeah. But over time, when they started doing, they wouldn't even celebrate just the touchdowns. As I said, they'd celebrate a complete pass that got a first down or a defensive back breaking up a play. And I hated all the dancing around. Like baseball, over time, I'm with you, Bob. My heart says this is not the way to do it. But I've accepted it. As the new wave of athlete, I've accepted it way more than I did even 10 years ago, and now I find it kind of humorous because none of it is meant to show up the other team.
And I guess we got to accept that. I guess we got to accept the game, too, because I'm listening to the announcers when they come on TV tell me, hey, you know, we're going to be a lot of pitching changes tonight because you know why? Boy, these guys have played a lot of baseball now. Pitchers' arms are tired. They played a 60-game schedule, for goodness sake. And you're
tired.
Coming out. These guys are starting. They're pitching one inning. They're pitching two innings, and you're just waiting to see the manager come out of the dugout, Dusty Baker bouncing out, changing guys every three hitters now. Yeah. I know it's the way it is. I know we have to accept it. It doesn't mean we have to like it.
Yeah, you're right.
Some of these rules that they've installed, I mean, this is like setting the game upside down. I mean, making a
guy have to pitch the three hitters? I mean, it seems so wrong. I mean, you know, you pitch a right-handed pitcher to a right-handed hitter. You do a left-hander on a left-hander. You're not able to do that anymore in the spirit of saving some time. Hell, they'll never save time by putting eight and nine pitchers in a ball game, for God's sakes. That's right. Impossible.
There is nothing that has delayed baseball more than pitching changes.
Right.
That's why the games take so long.
And that's why you and I record them. You better believe
that's
it.
That's why I fast forward. Yep. I don't need to see the pitcher jogging in from the bullpen. I don't need to see his ridiculous eight warm-up tosses or the commercial they put in between every pitching change.
That's right.
But that is so much a part of the game. And the message here is when you see what the Rays are doing and you see what the Braves are doing, and both of them are positioned to win their series, although the Astros showed some fight last night, is bullpens win pennants. It happened for Kansas City a few years ago. Yep. They had five flamethrowers in their bullpen. They won a World Series. They haven't done anything since. It's happened for other teams. And look at this Tampa Bay team and this Atlanta team. Look at the arms they throw out there. Tampa Bay has started relievers. They just have fireball after fireball, flamethrower after flamethrower.
And you heard what Ron Darling said.
Yeah.
You heard what Ron Darling said about that. And Denny, we all want your opinion. We want to know what you think about that as an old time pitching star. If you look at Thursday night's game, the first eight guys, pitchers for both teams, were all rookies, every single one of them. And Darling said, these kids now are so much farther advanced. They throw so much harder than we used to have. And they're all like 22, 23 years old. It didn't used to be that way, did it?
Right. Well, I don't think they throw any harder than what we threw. I really don't. I don't think they throw any harder. I don't think they do anything more than we did. When we came up, it was a little different. Again, we get back to, it was a different era. You were expected to do more when you got to the big leagues. When I played, you were supposed to be in the minor leagues for a little while and you matured a little bit. They don't wait on the maturity anymore. There's no maturity factor right now. Right now, there's only, if you throw the ball hard, you've got an invitation to the big leagues.
You're using the wrong adverb, though, Denny. You're using "we" instead of "I." You may have thrown that hard, but you didn't have seven guys on your staff, Freddie. They had Sam McDowell. Not throwing 95, 98 miles an hour.
They may have been throwing 89 or 90. They had Freddie, Sam McDowell.
They had Bob Heel on one staff. They didn't have six guys on one staff throwing 98 miles an hour. You're right. You mentioned some names that were flamethrowers. They had Ryan Duren.
I mean, come on. There were so many guys. But you're right.
Right. Yeah. Each staff wasn't equipped. Like, this Tampa Bay has five guys that can throw close to 100 miles an hour. And this is where I transition into the great Casey Mize. And I don't mean to pick on Casey Mize, but all we've heard all year is what a great prospect this kid is. He never won a game. He couldn't get past five innings. And you look at the staff of the Rays, for instance. Nick Anderson's 30 years old. Jose Alvarado, 25. Tyler Glasnow, 27. Diego Castillo, 26. These guys are all kids. Where are these guys in the Tiger organization? Atlanta has three starters with their number one guy, Soroka, going out late in the year. They got Ian Anderson, who I never heard of 2 months ago.
You never heard of Thick as a Brick? You never heard of Jethro Tull before? What's the matter with you? Where were you the last 50 years?
I haven't heard Bryce Wilson, who pitched the other night. They got all these kids that are light years ahead of Casey Mize right now. And I don't mean to pick on Casey. I'm kind of picking on the Tigers. How come they can't find these guys when all these other teams can? I mean, they got five guys on each staff that are better than the Tiger prospects. So let me add one thing.
Today, we don't talk about a guy, what a great game he pitched. Boy, he pitched good five or six innings tonight, didn't he, Freddie? Yes, he did. Now, let's move on to the next three guys for the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. We don't talk about him in a complete game anymore. When is the last time you heard complete game?
It's all changed.
10 years ago, Denny would say to me, quality start. That's one of the new stats in baseball at the time.
Yeah.
Denny used to say, to me, a quality start was a two-hit shutout. Okay, nine innings. And now, again, we're talking the same theme here in the first 15 minutes of the show. It's the changing nature of sports. It's happening before our eyes.
We're still seeing, obviously, future Hall of Famers, some of the greatest players who ever lived. And you can start with Springer's going to the Hall of Fame. You can go on with Jose Altuve. I want to get to a commercial break. But first, Danny, I want to ask you a question. You ever see anybody in your era get the yips? Throwing with a second base. We saw it with Steve Sachs, Mackie Sasser. We saw it with Chuck Knobloch.
Ankiel with St. Louis Cardinals, the left-handed pitcher.
Good one. Rick Ankiel.
He could not throw a ball near the catcher. I mean, it was just awful. He wound up playing the outfield to finish his career.
But that's not your era. You see anybody in your era ever have that problem?
Just after my era. And this kid just – all of a sudden, it went south, and he couldn't throw anywhere near. I mean, bases loaded, they brought him in the first time, and he threw like eight straight balls, not even close. So, he's the only one. And the other guy that I saw do it a lot at one time for about a week was Denny McClain, but he wasn't pitching. He was playing golf. Every time I hit a putt.
On a putting green, right?
God only knows where the ball was going to go.
And Brian Wilson even wrote a song about that.
Oh, I had the yips. I'm telling you, I had the yips serious time. Woo, terrible. There's no word in the golf world than the word yips.
If you're any fan of this show at all, and I know you are, then you already know that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with five locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has nine locations total. Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, then you relax with Feldman's exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee, and they also will guarantee you credit approval. You can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's nine locations. Feldman's massive inventory is unmatched in the Metro Detroit area. And you can also even buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with effortless, hassle-free experience. So let Feldman earn your business, and at the same time, support the show. We know you do anyway. And Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company. It's based in Metro Detroit. Every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels also made right here in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you save money, you help save the environment, and you never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. It's why Power Home Solar partners with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you're going to be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate any power outages for good. Power Home has finances starting at just $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and save an additional $1,800. So join the movement to solar and let the sun shine in. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, you know, speaking of power and losing it and stuff like that, that's why we're doing this on Friday morning. Thursday morning, I swear, 25 minutes before we're supposed to start our regular recording, I lose my power from my cable operator, Comcast, which is generally referred to as the worst business, not the worst cable operator, the worst business in the country. I mean, it's amazing. Brandon, you're going to come over to my place down here in Florida, where I am now someday, and show me how to cut the cord, as people are saying. So isn't it weird? We're talking about the baseball playoffs. And I know, Freddie, you weren't one of them, but virtually everybody said, well, we're going to see the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series this year. It's a foregone conclusion. We ain't going to see the Yankees, I'll tell you that much. So what now? As we record this again on Friday.
I didn't have the Yankees as going in. In fact, I had Cleveland beating them, but I had the Dodgers getting there. And Kershaw, again, he can't shake the postseason yips, for lack of a better word. He has the highest ERA now of any pitcher in the postseason that's thrown at least 100 innings. And he was 2-0 in these playoffs and was licking his chops to kind of reverse the trend. in what is it, game five, and then got, you know, Dave, the manager, Dave Roberts, is getting criticized for leaving him in too long, but Kershaw can't break the hex, and, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Oh, yeah, no, wait, John Smoltz said that. Smoltz, he said it on the air. He said he's going to the Hall of Fame. Freddie's got 175 wins. He's 32 years old. We know they don't win as many games as they used to. He could get hurt. And then you're looking at his body of work with his mediocre offseason performance. Then what do you got?
Well, you make a good point. Mickey Lolich won 216, and they don't even breathe his name into the Hall of Fame. But I didn't realize he had that few victories, but he's still only 32. But his postseason thing is going to haunt him.
He also has three Cy Youngs. So let's not overlook that. That's pretty important. Because when he was good, he was really, really good.
I mean, Denny, you got two, and you're sitting here with us doing the show.
Yeah, but that's only because I love you guys.
It's not for the money. I know that, Denny.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is I want to draw your attention to, I played in the World Series, obviously, in 68. And in the sixth game, we scored 10 runs in the third inning, led by Jimmy Northrup, hit a grand slam home run that game. And as they got to the sixth run, I'll never forget what I told Kaline. We're sitting on a bench together, and I said, once they scored the sixth run, and we're now ahead 6-0, and I said to Al, I said, that's enough. I said, that's enough. I don't want any more. If I sit here longer, I won't be able to go out and pitch. I'll be so stiff. He says, no, 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 no. He said, the way you pitched the first two games, we're going to get you 10. So,
and they did.
So they did. They got
reminiscent 10. Of what the Dodgers did with that big first inning the other night.
Unbelievable.
And I look at this Atlanta team. I mean, again, I talked about the prospects and the pitching, but I don't think you give this Atlanta team much credit. Acuña is going to be a superstar. Albies is on the border. They got this kid Pache, who's now playing center field, who nobody's heard of. He's playing because somebody got hurt. He's got a budding star. They got Austin Riley, who's not going to be a great player, but a solid young player. They got so many good young players. The Braves have just done it right for like 1,000 years. But their postseason has been tarnished too, because they don't get to World Series very often. But looks like they're going to get to this one. Yeah.
Well, but you just
got one
you
question.
Just,
I got one question. Yeah. For two of you. Where are the guys that we're supposed to have? Do we have any of these guys?
Fred asked that already.
That's why I bring it up.
Sense that we can't find one.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, but Freddie, you just inadvertently hit on one of my main themes from the baseball postseason when you referred to somebody nobody's ever heard of. Now, you know, because of the ridiculous schedule this year, it seemed like the Tigers were playing the Twins or the White Sox or the Indians just constantly. Yeah. They're sending. We didn't see any of these other teams. I watch virtually every Tiger game. I do see the Mets a lot also in New York, but they're just playing area teams. I don't know who half of these guys are. That's not good for baseball, but again, it's an aberration.
Yeah, it's the only way they could really do it this year, the way they chose to do it. That's why the most valuable player and Cy Young Award winners are kind of a joke, because they don't face 8 or 9 or 10 teams. So how can you win a most valuable player when there's even 10 teams in the league when you don't even face? But, you know, you got to have one, and that's all part of this asterisk season. But I'll tell you, take away the asterisks, take away the 60-game schedule, take away all that went into this, postseason baseball is still pretty riveting. It really is.
No question. Right. But I'm also hearing guys on TV, and to bring back Lansing native John Smoltz, saying, well, we had to play an extra series one year when they started the new playoff format. So when we won the World Series, it meant more to us. People are saying, this is in this difficult year with the pandemic, if you win the World Series this year, it's going to mean more than any World Series could. BS.
Oh, that's
I don't believe that.
That's silly.
Yeah, I don't buy that either. It'll mean something because it's there. But I think history will show, well, that was still the 60-game season. And whether you like baseball for the way it is or not, one of the things about it that I love is the 162-game season really allows the cream to rise to the crop.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of times 60 games is a warm-up to the real show. Yeah. So I don't buy what you said at all. I know you didn't say it, Bob, but people have said that. I can't imagine how it's more special than going through a 162-game grind, but it is what it is.
Right, yeah. And people were saying, well, what did you look, Derek Jeter had the last laugh. Look at what a great job he finally did with the Marlins after people wanted to run him out of South Florida. Well, we don't know what would have happened to the Marlins if they played 162. They might have been the same joke that they've always been. I don't know. I'm just suggesting that.
Well, you know, the thing about it, though, remember, the measuring mark that most of us have used is 40 to 60 games every year, which will give you kind of an idea where a club is going to be, how much more talented they are or how much more talent they need. So that 40 to 60 games is the real measuring stick. And in most cases, it's pretty accurate.
I think Bob's right. I think if it had the whole season played out, the Marlins, they wouldn't have been a joke, but they might not have been anywhere near this. And look at Houston. Houston could claw back into the World Series, and they were under 500 for the 60
yeah,
games.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, it's an aberration all the way around.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, some guys, you look at the Mets kid who had 50 home runs last year, and he struggled at the plate this season. Well, maybe he would have got it going. We
Pete
just
Alonso.
Don't know. But I want to say this. Denny McClain's age is not a secret to anybody. He's 76. And here comes Tony La Russa
in
reports. The Angels have granted the White Sox, as he works for them, permission to interview Tony. He's talking about coming back. He hasn't been a major league manager since ending that 16-year run with the Cardinals in 2011. Denny, you guys are the same age. Could you see managing a major league baseball team at 76?
I can see it, but I can't do it because my patience isn't the way it once was. And if you don't have patience with these kids, you're not going to be very successful. I don't know how Tony, although the reason why Tony's doing it, because he's such a good friend of the owner. And the owner is, you know, lives in Arizona, but he used to own he owns the White Sox now and some of the other clubs in the minor leagues. But he is a good baseball man. They've been very close for a very long time. In fact, Tony was the president of Arizona operations at one time. And the Red Sox. And
yeah, I just think it's too old. You look what happened to Gardenhire. Believe
yeah,
it or
I
not,
agree.
He's 6 years younger than I am. He's sick. He's only 62. He looks like he's 82. And Fred, I don't know how you felt about it, but I did not like the way he left the Detroit Tigers. Avila should have known. Maybe he's too old. He's not in great shape. He didn't take care of himself. He's reasonably and understandably afraid of COVID-19. It shouldn't have happened. I just left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, a man can't help the way he feels, but he clearly didn't feel good all year. And he even dropped hints a few weeks before in a piece in the Detroit News that Tony Paul did, that he's tired, that he's worn out, that this is a grind, that he doesn't feel good. He already had a prostate scare. He is afraid of COVID. So
why take the job? Avila should never have hired him, and Gardy should have said, I'm too old for this. I don't want to do this. I don't
need
the
3 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe he didn't feel that way. I think this kind of came on in the last year. And COVID certainly affected it. But here's my question, getting back to La Russa. What happens now, because analytics runs the game? General managers are now involved in forming the lineups and in how you position players. What about the first time the general manager or the scouting director or the people in the front office tell Tony La Russa how we should play this hitter and play that hitter? Analytics runs the game. That's the direction the Tigers are going to.
Okay, remember, Tony La Russa is actually the lawyer. He's got a law degree. He's an extremely bright guy. So I think he'd be pretty adaptable, even
though
he's 76.
You may be right, but I just wonder that out loud, because analytics runs the game, and analytics will help determine the next manager of the Tigers, I promise you, because as an organization, they are going in that direction, and they want a guy who embraces analytics. And not all the old school guys or the old the analytics.
So did you see the new name involved in this big search by Mr. Avila? The Detroit papers are reporting today that Cubs third base coach Will Venable is going to be interviewed, or at least probably will, by Avila. He's 37. He's an Ivy League grad. We've seen this with Brad Ausmus, another Ivy League grad. It seems to be the way they're going, because when I covered locker rooms for so many years in the 70s and 80s, most of the managers you were dealing with were old-time baseball guys. It's all changed again.
It has changed.
Just doesn't make sense. You don't want baseball people in the front office running the ball club, whether it's analytics or not. They got to have people up there that understand talent, that can see talent, can understand what the talent's all about. Is there a kid talented that will be better in 2 or 3 years? Those are the types of questions you need in the front office. And right now, boys, we don't have that. I mean, Avila, as nice a man as he is, you know, he's had 18 or 19 years as an assistant. Now he's for the first time a general manager. That does not make you a general manager because you sat there for 18
years. The jury's out. Okay. The question, and we've talked about this a lot before, is it's one thing for Al to say, here's the guy I want. It's another thing for that to most importantly be rubber stamped upstairs by Chris Illich. So here's what right. we got. He's already interviewed George Lombard. We talked about that last show. He's with the Dodgers, played briefly with the Tigers. And Marcus Thames, one-time Tiger. He's a hitting coach with the Yankees. This is according to MLB.com. Right. Of course, you got Hinch and Cora, who can't sign with anybody till after the World Series. Then you got former Tiger Don Kelly. You got Freddie Gonzalez, who's proven himself to be a good major league manager. And here's a name nobody's even talking about. Here's a proven MLB manager, and he's sitting on the bench, Lloyd McClendon. Whom do you guys like out of that group?
You know, I got him. I got McClendon on my number one list. I got him at the top of the list. Why not? Every time they have a problem, he's the guy that they go to. Give him a shot. Give him a two, three-year deal, and let him see what he can do. Lord knows he knows the talent within the organization.
He is not high on my list, Lloyd
McClendon. Why not?
I think he's not even on mine.
I think he's a coach, and I think he may be a terrific coach. I think there's a personality you have to have as a manager,
sure.
a dynamic that I don't see that he has. I think there's a dynamic with the players, and I think a lot of times when a guy's a coach in the dugout, he becomes the player's sounding board and best friend, and I think that's a tough transition to go from a coach of any variety into the manager's role. And I've never been on the, in fact, of all the candidates, he's a nice enough guy. We're dropping that a lot today, but I don't think Lloyd McClendon is a logical choice to manage this ball.
Okay. So what are you doing there? Are you going to go with AJ Hinch? And Brandon, we want to hear from you too.
I would go with AJ Hinch or Alex Cora over any of them because they have done it before, and they have done it recently. Yeah. They have won at the highest levels recently. Right. And if you're not going to get one of those guys, I wouldn't try a Hail Mary with a McClendon or, you know, with somebody.
He has a lot of major league managerial and coaching experience. That's no Hail Mary, Lloyd McClendon.
I don't think he's a Hail Mary, Brandon, but I just don't think he's the right choice.
Let me explain.
You know, Marcus Thames is gaming steam. I guess they've interviewed him twice, and I covered Marcus a little bit. Terrific guy, but he hasn't run a team. He's been a coach. He's been a hitting coach, and there's a different. That's a big step to be a hitting coach and running a bullpen, which is key, running a team, having a say on the clubhouse. I don't think Tim's is ready for that.
Well, let me explain.
How about this? You've been ripping the Tigers on this show so far today, Freddie, for their seeming lack of talent, the young pitchers, and so on and so forth. So if other people feel the way you do, what makes this Detroit job so attractive? And can the Tigers get one of these top guys, or will they go someplace else instead?
That's a good point. Another concern of mine in terms of Hinch or Cora. I think Hinch has his eyes on the White Sox. I think Cora has his eyes on returning to the Red Sox. And even though the Red Sox had a really bad year, I think those jobs are eminently more appealing than the Tigers. So I never mind what choice they are of the Tigers. I think the Tigers would be the second or third choice in both of those guys' minds. And I don't know if it's so much ripping the Tigers, Bob, maybe it's a criticism at some of the local media who build these guys up and make us believe they're all everything,
right.
And they buy the company lines. And I don't mean to keep picking on Casey Mize. I hope he's a terrific pitcher. I just get tired of hearing how great he is already, and I watch some of these other teams.
I don't think anybody's saying that.
Performing.
Well,
yeah,
well, nobody's saying that.
Don't you, Danny?
Yeah, hang on a second here. Listen,
I hear that
the two guys that we're talking about who had the problems with the cheating scandal, they're coming back with somebody, and they won't be Detroit because you got to pay a lot of money to get people
that's
to
not
come
a problem.
Back to Detroit.
That's not a problem.
The Illich family does not like to spend money. They never have, and they never will, unless you can give them 45 or 50 home runs a year. That's what they're looking for. Also, I will tell you that the Tigers just had a round of layoffs again in the office. So something's going on there. And every time I hear that they've laid off some more guys, and big guys, by the way, this time, when they lay off some big guys, that tells me possibly, who knows, maybe they're talking to somebody about coming in with some new money and buying the ball club. You know, you never know. But that's I do know that there's been another round of layoffs.
Well, they just, I mean, if you look at the Ilitch family again, Denny, I mean, there's just, we recounted this last show. They just bought out former Michigan State star and team leader, kid we loved, Justin Abdelkader. They're still paying Stevie Weiss, for goodness sake. The Wings have always spent money, but is Chris going to spend money the way his dad did? That, I think, is what we're getting at right here.
No way.
And again, as you
no
say,
way.
Okay,
no
considering
way.
The pandemic also, yeah, this could be a different situation now. And by the way, what does Marian Ilitch have to say about this? Is Chris really the guy calling the shots? Or does he go to mom and say, Mommy, can I sign this guy, please? I don't know.
Well, whether Mommy has anything to do with it or not, I think Mommy and Chris have probably, they're probably on the same page. In other words, they're into developing rather than going out and buying a team. I think that's really where they're at. And as we can see, they don't know what they're doing yet. I mean, they've got no concept yet as to putting a team together. You've heard me talk about this a number of times. You got to have two or three guys as the nucleus of your baseball team. You have to, whether they're pitchers or whether they're infielders or outfielders, you got to have three or four guys that can stimulate the ball club, and everybody wants to play on the same page. And we don't have that here. I think one of the problems is I think we have gone a hair overboard just a little bit with the Latino population here we have with the ball club.
Let me finish.
There's nothing negative about what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I think you got to have the right mix, Latino and other.
Why? You just got to win. What does that mean?
Well, you know what? There is a language barrier. There is. And
I don't think that's that bad.
A big difference. It makes a big difference, guys.
Why? More, why does that make a big difference?
Because
you got plenty of guys on that ball club who speak English and Spanish.
That's not the way you want to handle your business, is it?
Well, unfortunately, that's the way a lot of it is in baseball today, but nobody cares. You look at these clubs now winning in the playoffs. Man, they're all brothers. Nobody, and somebody is going to be there to interpret until they learn to speak English, which they will. That much I guarantee you. So I don't see that as being an issue at all. Latinos essentially are beginning to take over baseball. Thank goodness for them. Thank goodness for Latinos, because we've heard so much about black kids gravitating to basketball and football instead, and baseball fields in the inner cities of the country being empty all the time. I mean, I just don't see it. You get the best players and you win. And the bottom line is, as you say, Denny, we don't know that Al Avila knows enough or is smart enough or is a good enough general manager to get the best players. He may be.
Latino impact is one of the reasons I like Joey Cora as a fit for this club.
That's a great point.
To your other point. But the other point is, what is the nucleus of the Tigers? Who are their leaders?
Yeah,
their base? A guy making
$40 million a year who's almost 40 years old. That essentially is their base.
Miguel Cabrera. Right? Plus the kids. I don't know what the identity of the Tigers is right now. I just
because
they don't have the young dynamic players that Houston and Tampa and Atlanta. Now, I'm talking about the elite of the league right now, but I don't know what the identity of the Tigers is right now because they don't have the young, dynamic players that make you get excited about them.
They may turn out to be young, dynamic
players.
Maybe
that kid in Toledo, maybe that number one pick will turn out to be it. I hope so. Yeah.
Folks, I want you to think about this. It's critical. If you're not 100% satisfied with your financial plan right now, we recommend that you get in touch with Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Luke has served many area businesses and families by creating great financial plans and trusts, whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement. Why not let Luke's track record of success and decades of experience create a custom solution for you or your business? Now, you want to call Luke, 248-663-4748, and he's going to set up a complimentary consultation. Doesn't cost you a dime. You feel comfortable with what he tells you, you let Luke do his thing. He lays out a plan that fits your individual needs. You don't want to be worried about money in your retirement, folks. Totally ethical, knowledgeable, caring. That's Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And again, that number to call is 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And if you haven't refinanced your mortgage in the past few years, if you have a mortgage, get out there and get it done right now. This is the time to call David Hall Mortgage. He's been serving the Metro Detroit community for more than 30 years, and David's maintained a leadership position in the market by consistently offering better options, more personal attention, and in the process, he's built a resume of thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial proudly provides the fastest service in the business, generally three or fewer weeks, and that's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So you go to DavidHallMortgage.com or just call them. And how easy is this number to remember? 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, boys, we had what looked like a big development potentially this week in football when Fred's old buddy Nick Saban was announced. He had tested positive for COVID-19 with number three Georgia coming up on Saturday. He's okay, Freddie. He's got no symptoms. I mean, I wasn't concerned about this. And he says he wants to, whether they're going to let him as we record this Friday, he plans to coach this game on Saturday night.
Yeah, he's talking that way. As we record this, a day away, day and a half away from the game, Nick says he can coach. He says, I feel fine, but right now he has to have, I believe it's three negative tests.
Three.
So he could find out at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon that he's got his third negative test and jog out there with the team and coach the team. But this is the COVID era. And this is, you know, I've been saying all along, I'm careful when I say this about the overreaction, but positive tests are not getting sick, okay? We're still learning about COVID, but this isn't March anymore, okay? We freak out, the president tested positive. We freak out, Nick
and his son
tested positive.
And
that doesn't mean they're sick and they're going to die, okay? People aren't dying at the rate they were, and testing positive, everyone freaks out. It is what we live in now, the COVID era, but testing positive does not mean you're going to get sick and die or those around you are going to get sick and die. I understand the caution. I'm Fred, not trying to be naive about it, but we freak out when anything tests positive. Nick says, I feel fine. I can coach. But the likelihood as we speak now is they may not let him.
Well, the thing about it is this, that it isn't so much the person who's carrying it around.
Right.
It's the person who he passes it on to or she passes it on to. That's the problem. That's the real extreme threat here. And you just don't know who, when, or why. But these things happen. People are getting sick. We've had the two alerts for two more surges in Michigan and Ohio. Both states, as hooked as we are closely to each other. And so both states have got the alert on today, the red alert. Right. And they're expecting 70 or 80,000 new cases.
Fall surge. You and Eli have been talking about that for some time. We don't know what's going
to
happen.
And this is my concern for the Big Ten, which is scheduled to start in 10 days as we speak, or 9 days.
Right.
If they're going to be able to get a season in, because some of the states those schools are involved in, including ours, have issues. And Michigan State's campus has issues. So, is that first game even in jeopardy? Of course it is. I think we're going to see some postponements in the Big Ten, and that's going to cause havoc on the schedule. But in the COVID era, that's kind of the roll of the dice. But I think this is going to become a developing story because I question whether the Big Ten can get this schedule in. It doesn't mean I don't think they shouldn't play. But I think playing is going to be with some complications.
Well, guess what? I got a chance to do, boys, and I'm actually thinking about doing it. I'm thinking about driving from West Palm Beach just down to Miami Saturday noon to watch the Hurricanes play Pat Narduzzi's Pitt Panthers. So, they're going to go through with the game, and, of course, they're going to have people in the stands. We can do that. Capacity crowds here in Florida by order of our governor. I don't know that I want to sit 3.5 hours with a mask on, which you still have to do. And of course, it might rain. But, Narduzzi is 3-2, Freddie. I know you know him well from having covered Lansing sports and Detroit for so long. They're coming off two straight 1-point losses, each of the last two Pitt games, including last week's overtime defeat at Boston College. Yeah. Now, he's 39-31, coming off an 8-5 season when Michigan State hired Mel Tucker instead. I always thought Narduzzi was going to be the next head football coach at Michigan State. Why didn't he become that? And should they have hired Narduzzi?
He was the logical choice all along, but he pulled out. I mean, he came out.
Then why didn't he want the job? Why didn't he want
it? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the insight to that. I think he's got where he is now. He has family, and he's somewhat rooted in that area in the Western Pennsylvania. And I think he likes it there. And I think he feels like he's in the middle of the job there. In a certain sense, Michigan State would be starting over as Mel Tucker is. I don't think the timing was right. That's not to say he wouldn't ever come back. But he eliminated himself as a candidate when he came out early and said, I'm staying at Pitt. So I don't think it was a matter of Michigan State not being interested. I think Pat Mariduzzi said, you know, great experience there. Loved my time there. I like it here and I want to stay here. I think that's all there is to it. But yeah, he could be 5-0 right now with a few more breaks. And I think he's a good man. I think I think a personality difference between he and D'Antonio would have made a different leadership, because he's a lot more fiery and outspoken. Yeah. Although, I think that could have caused some problems, because he got in trouble here a little bit for not being politically correct a couple of times. And Michigan State is a very politically correct university. And if you don't walk the line, you're going to be in trouble. And I think he would have had problems here of not being politically correct. Because
now, what did he do? What do you mean by that? Because I don't remember offhand.
Yeah, he had, I'm trying to, I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm trying to think of the incident he had where he got scolded. I think it had to do with being physical during a game. And he said we should, I think it was the Michigan series. He said, we if that happens again, we're going to take action. And he got in trouble with that. And, he's very much into the physical, and he got in trouble a few times with that. And it appeared as though he was promoting violence. And, you know, he was just a rough, tough defensive guy. And it got him in trouble a few times. His mouth got him in trouble a few times. And he doesn't walk the politically correct line all the time. And that would have got him in trouble here at this school, I promise you.
Well, all right, here's one thing. Talking about violence playing football, huh?
When ironic, Dick Butkus played, it was a violent game. But, you watch these games now. How many times do you leap out of your seats while you're watching a football game after they throw a flag and you scream, that's just football. Let them play. There's nothing wrong with that hit. It's all changed.
Well, like everything else. And the helmet is a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, Freddie, I want to bounce another name off you here now, because it's another Michigan State guy, you know, from Lansing where you are, and another guy you covered it, another guy you know very well. I've never met him in my life. What the hell is wrong with Le'Veon Bell? He just got cut by the Jets, and he's been signed by the Kansas City Chiefs as if they needed any more help, by the way. He's still only 28. He walks away from a guaranteed $14 million to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he's one of the great players in the NFL. And they're saying now he's not the same player. He's not as quick. What kind of person is he?
Well, you know, I did know him here pretty well, and he was just a nice, shy, innocent kid. But all I can tell you, I've talked to him once since he left here. He was at a game 2 years ago, and I said hello at halftime, and we were going to hook up later and whatnot. But it just seems like the money really changed Le'Veon Bell, because he was not this way at all in college, I can promise you. And that Pittsburgh thing, he screwed up. I mean, he could have played there his whole career and been one of the monarchs of that organization. He could have been He could have been revered there, and the money he did wasn't getting the money he wanted. He got impatient, so he got his money and went to the Jets, and look where he is now.
If you love the FLs, you should see the Jets. When I started covering the Jets in 88, it took me a month and a half to understand that I had unwittingly stumbled into Detroit Lions East. It's a mess of an organization. It's a complete joke, just like the Lions, and that's where he goes.
Yeah, and that's another guy, you know, talking of Michigan State, Adam Gase has Michigan State ties, but how he's still coaching there is beyond me. You know, I have been on this Matt Patricia bandwagon, but the number one coach who should be fired in the NFL is Adam Gase. And he's completely lost control. He has no respect to the players. He let their best player walk away. And Le'Veon Bell couldn't make it work there. Although, you know, as I started to say, Le'Veon Bell created his own issues in Pittsburgh. I think he put a wall between he and Tomlin with the money. And all I can tell you to answer your question is I did know him. He was a really nice kid. And I think the money changed him. And now he's going to be on the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, you know, the good news with the Kansas City Chiefs, he'll take a different approach with him than any other coach has probably taken with him. And you know what? Maybe he needs to be bent over once in a while. Maybe he needs to be run around the park a couple of times. But I think Andy Reid is the guy that can help him in more ways than one, because Andy kind of considers himself a grandfather to some of these kids. And I think he'll do real well there. I'm going to be surprised. And I'm not talking about another 1,300-yard or 85 touchdowns or anything else like that. But I'm just talking about a real good player who can fill some things for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know, Bob, you said that, well, they really don't need much.
yeah, they do need much after what we saw the other day. I mean,
that's one game. It's one game. Come
well,
on.
Well, you know what? It's maybe it's a thing of a picture of things to come. And I like that kid at quarterback. He's just the greatest kid I've seen in professional football. And then, of course, we have the other one who has.
And they are the defending Super Bowl champs. I wouldn't worry too much about Kansas City. The rich get richer. But, fellas, I think the big topic of on everybody's mind right now, I know you can sense even from where you are, the excitement beginning to build. People are really, really on the edge of their seats. They are so looking forward to Sunday. When at Jacksonville, be there or be square. It's the FLs against the Jags. Your thoughts on that one?
Well, the Lions are a 3-point favorite. Can you believe that?
Three and a half. It's up to 3.5.
So it just went up. As a matter of fact, Vegas says they have a 60% chance of winning this coming Sunday. So I that's a game you stay away from.
Yeah, the stage is set for another FL's choke then. You know what that means.
It's not only that, Bob. It's the idea that this game could end up in a tie. They could play forever.
0-0.
0-0.
So now, by the way, the Lions fired 7 people this week too, including their former longtime PR director, Bill Keenest.
They fired Bill Keenest?
How the hell could you fire Bill Keenest?
Yeah, they did. They fired 7 people. Yeah. And, you know,
Bill's
he had
a
become,
nice man, but
yeah, he'd become a team historian. He's no longer involved in public relations. But, you know, the point is they haven't made any move in the front office yet. But if they lose these next 2 games, stay tuned.
It's so, you know, really, they almost have to beat Jacksonville. If they lose this game to Jacksonville, you could see head rolls. But who knows? The silliest thing that I saw all week long was after Dak Prescott went down as lost, as you know, to the Cowboys for the season. Articles started cropping up all over the place. Matthew Stafford's going to be traded to the Cowboys. Yeah. Go home to Dallas, take his place. Yeah, really? Really?
No.
And then what? What do the FLs do with quarterback? And what happens to Dallas when Dak's healthy again and ready to play next year? And with that, we got to say goodbye to our radio audience down in Toledo. We didn't mention former Tigers second baseman Jake Wood is the guest on the show today. Going to have a lot of fun talking to him. So join us on the internet at our website for that. And thanks for being with us again, Toledo. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So then, Freddie the Pizza Man, regular listener, I saw him tweet today. Bobby Lane, I did not know this, is from Highland Park, Texas, which is where both Stafford happens to be from and the Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw as well. Mm-hmm. Lane said when the Lions traded him after that great run in the 1950s of World Championship, they were so pissed the Lions won't win for another 50 years. Was Bobby Lane right about that? So Freddie says if the Lions traded Matthew Stafford from Highland Park, would the jinx be reversed? Freddie, I don't think so.
Well, the same name has been on the organization for 50 some years, and until that changes, it probably isn't going to change. That's a tired old moment. I understand.
I said the most ridiculous thing I saw all week, but this is a close second. The big headlines this week: Detroit Lions coaches know why Matthew Stafford's play has been mediocre. It's his footwork.
Yeah,
It's his footwork. Yeah, that's actually what they said this week.
I know.
And they didn't correct that before it happened. I mean, give me a break. Yeah, I did see that, and I chuckled when I read that. I did see that. First of all, Dallas made a really smart move in signing Andy Dalton because he's not the elite quarterback, but he has been a starting quarterback. So they aren't going to fall off the map as much as you think with a guy who has been there and done that. And that's the other problem. If they get Stafford, then what do they do about Dak Prescott, who's going to come back? And then you got 2 frontier quarterbacks. So I think the Matthew Stafford thing was just a media connection to his home, and why not? And I don't think there was any teeth to that at all, and I don't think any of it came from the Lions or the Cowboys. I really don't. I think it was just media speculation. It was just a sexy story.
It was a sexy story, but I mean, that's what – listen, when you're not winning, you got to throw sexy stories out there. You got to find something else to talk about.
When you're trying to sell newspapers and your business is going under, Danny, that's what happens also. I mean, it's the free press, the news, and every other newspaper in America is in mortal danger. And so, of course, you've got to do whatever you can. And concomitantly, we're seeing a lot of young reporters. We're even seeing interns with the newspapers, at least the Detroit papers, which I read every day, interns writing regular articles as though they're beat writers. So, I mean, look, life has changed. And that's been the subject this show, hasn't it? You just kind of have to adjust to it. You have to roll with the punches. There are just a lot of things that are out of our control.
It's never going to be the same. Never.
Nope. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the passing at age 68. That's too young, way too young. Of Fred Dean this week, the great pass rusher with the San Francisco 49ers, and before that, the San Diego Chargers. So, Fred, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, we have you in today, sitting in for Eli, continuing in the Michigan State vein, because that's where you worked for so long, that's where you live. Tom Izzo held his news conference Wednesday, which is kind of an unofficial kickoff to the season because they started their preseason practice. We know the two best players are gone, Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman. There seems to be a tremendous amount of optimism anyway, Michigan State, some of these new kids coming in. How good is this team going to be?
Well, I don't know because I, you know, the new kids, all I know is what I read rather than what I see.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always skeptical about that. But I do know that Izzo is loaded again. He's got two back-to-back recruiting classes that are out of this world and more coming down the road. You know, I think that Michigan State is loaded again, but don't underestimate what Cassius Winston brought to that team that they no longer have. You don't lose a player like Cassius Winston and get better. So I'm interested to see who can fill that void in terms of leadership and the go-to guy. Aaron Henry is a terrific athlete, and he opted to come back, although he threw his name into the NBA draft. He came back, and that's a big addition, or non-subtraction, as I should say, for Michigan State, because he's going to turn out to be the new leader of this team. Is he up for that? I don't know yet. That's what we're going to have to see, because Cassius Winston was up for it. Cassius Winston could tell his coach to sit down and relax. He could yell at him back, and Izzo would listen to him, as he always does. That's one of his great, great traits as a coach, is he actually encourages players to yell at him and challenge him, and he's okay with that, and he's the same way in practice. Whether he can develop that kind of relationship with Aaron Henry, and Henry can elevate his game because he also has to be a better player and a leader, I think that's going to be key, because over the years, what has made Michigan State team successful is the leadership they've had. They've had some terrific leaders, going back, starting with Mateen Cleaves and the guys over the years, Alan Anderson, some of the people they've had, Winston, even Kalen Lucas in his day. They've had some really good leaders, and we don't know yet if Aaron Henry is up to that task or if he is indeed going to be the leader of this team. But don't worry about Michigan State. He's got a loaded roster. He's a hungry coach who is still driven by the fact that he's only won one championship. That drives him crazy.
I bet it does. I've always said that. I mean, there are plenty of guys in the Basketball Hall of Fame who didn't win one at all.
Right.
You know,
it drives Izzo crazy.
It drives him crazy. Now, the questions you just posed, there's an obvious answer. And under normal circumstances, I'd have the answer for you. When you have a guy who is a star point guard, and you got a kid who's the backup point guard, who's not a freshman. He's had a lot of experience coming in. And you just named Foster Lawyer of Clarkston, Michigan, one of the great schoolboy preps in Michigan for the last decade, 20 years. You named him one of your three captains. I thought he'd transfer Fred in the offseason. I don't think Foster Lawyer is really a Big Ten player. I think he'd be great at Central or Western or someplace like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, who's going to fill that important role, not just behind Cassius Winston, but leadership?
I don't disagree at all, Bob. I don't think he's physical enough. I don't think he is a prototype Big Ten player. He was a wonderful college player. He's a great kid. Sorry. He was a terrific high school player. And to me, he has Mid-American Conference written all over him, because I think he'd be a star in that league. I'm not sure he can be a Big Ten force. And maybe they're challenging him by giving him this leadership role. I don't know.
Hey, guys, if you're like me, you're over 45, and believe me, I'm a lot over 45, and you can't see your phone without your reading glasses. It's so frustrating. I'm always replacing mine all over the house. It's ridiculous, and that's why so many people 45-plus have been getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Rialdo. It enables you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance at the same time. Look, Eli did this a few years ago. He's been saying it's a life-changing experience, Bob. You got to have it done. Lifetime lasting procedure. But for people like Brandon McAfee, if you're under 45, you can still opt for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo, the most precise in the Metro Detroit area, because what that's going to do is enable you to once and for all throw away your annoying contact lenses and your glasses, put them right in the garbage. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So get a free evaluation, doesn't cost you anything, to find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. I feel like I'm talking to myself. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And you tell them that No Filter Sports sent you, you'll get $1,500 off the regular price. Star Lincoln's Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, a family business started half a century ago by Hoot McEnery, the legendary Detroit auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. One woman wrote, "My entire experience was more than wonderful." Another said, "The buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and much quicker than I anticipated." And this one, "I just bought a Nautilus online. It was super easy. It was delivered to my home, and they sanitized it in my driveway." Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars, and in buying a Lincoln at Hoot McEnery Star, you're going to find both the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free and as effortless as possible. So you drive the Star of American auto luxury by going to Star Lincoln. You make an appointment, 248-354-4900, or just buy online at starlincoln.com. We got time for another story here. You guys got anything else on your minds? You want me to do the mailbag? You want to do the mailbag before we get to Jake Wood?
Yeah, let's do the mailbag.
We'll do that. And you can tweet us, let you know, as we always do up front. Tweet me, at least, at Bob Page Sport. Now, Fred, you're on Twitter, I know, but you don't do much with it. You want to give me your address?
Not a lot.
You forgot your address. That tells people how
Uncle
much you're
Fred
respond
Six.
To them.
Uncle Fred Six, I believe.
I saw that the other day. And yeah. And of course, there's also MU2 Denny, at MU2 Denny on Twitter. On our interview with the Birds' personal catcher, Bruce Kim, from last week, Kirk5521 tweets, "You know, I really enjoyed the interview. Great memories for me. I saw Fid Richard's show. He shook my hand. Just couldn't have been nicer. We kidded about the long line behind me to get Mark's autograph. Thanks for keeping the politics, by the way, out of your podcast. And I've started listening again and really enjoy the show." James Harris says, "Great episode. Interesting catching up with Bruce and his long baseball journey. As a baseball fan, I've really explored analytics already. It makes you look at the game differently. An overrated stat is pitcher wins. Too much depends on outside factors, relief squad, run support, etc. Danny, you buying into that? Pitcher wins an overrated stat?
Little bit.
Yep, especially since they're now starting every fifth day instead of
every
four
fifth day. You know what? Sooner or later, it's going to go to six, and then sooner or later, you're going to see a guy goes out there for three innings. That's what's that's where this game is headed.
No, we're seeing him go out there for one right now with these openers.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I think
you're
is
right.
Ridiculous. Yep. Paul Carone, the Detroit native who's now a television news director down in Alabama, big fan of the show, says, "Great interview with Bruce Kim. But how did Denny not know that the Bird was one of the fastest paced starting pitchers ever? Of course, umpires like that. Better question would be, you slow the game down by arguing balls and strikes much." Now, you didn't do that because you didn't argue that much, but that does kind of take you out of your rhythm, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. Of course it does. You want to,
which is why you don't bitch much about pitch calls. Right.
It's this thing all about rhythm. That's all it is.
The Bird wasn't any faster than Denny. Denny was 2 hours and 6 minutes most nights.
Yeah. A question I wanted to ask you from the last show, Denny. I don't think as long as we've known each other, I have asked you this. Larry Sorensen, sitting in, was talking about how, like all Detroit kids of that era, who wanted to be pitchers, he'd go out behind his house, wherever, he would pretend he was Denny McClain with a high leg kick. Where did you get that? Did somebody teach you that? Did you come up with it on your own? Why do you think that leg kick made you more effective?
There's two things. Number one was my dad. My dad believed in it. It gave me more momentum. And then the other, more power. And the other one, there was a pitcher with the Chicago Cubs by the name of Bob Rush. He only played in the big leagues a couple of years.
Played with Milwaukee Braves, too, didn't he, I think?
Yep, I think so. And then what happened was my dad took me to a Cub game, and lo and behold, he caught a foul ball hit off the bat of Bob Rush. So Bob Rush, and he wore number 17. So my number 17 and the baseball got me the high kick because of Bob Rush.
Are you telling me that's the reason you wore number 17?
That's
your whole
the
career?
Reason I wore number 17.
Bob bleeping Rush?
Because my dad caught the foul ball from Bob Rush, who wore number 17.
I've never heard that in my life. Yep. Did you ever get a chance to meet Bob Rush and tell him that?
No. The other guy who was one of my heroes was Phil Cavaretta, who was a hell of a player.
With the Cubs?
With the Cubs. And he was, as a matter of fact, when I was trying to come back in the 70s sometime, Phil Cavaretta was my manager. Can you believe that? You go full circle, and eventually you run into the end of it.
Yeah. I want to add also that Kurt Kosmowski compliments me. He says, great research by Bob on Bruce Kemp's high school basketball exploits. All these legends had good multi-sport success, so it's great to hear somebody mention how good these people are, such as when we had Butch Wolfolk on recently, and no one or few realized just what a great track and field athlete he was. You can write us anytime you want also, and just let us know what's on your mind at asknofilter@gmail.com. Or you can call us and leave a message, 760-89-BALLS, or text us at that number as well. So I want to do a short mailbag now because we got to get to Jake Wood.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you this. I've never met Jake Wood in my life, one of the heroes of my childhood growing up in Detroit when he was a Detroit second baseman, native of Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Yep.
And so let's get to Mr. Wood. Freddie, I don't know if you feel the same way I do, but you and I have covered sports, major league sports, for so many years, a long time, 46 years for me. I don't even know who half the kids are in baseball anymore. You watch these games. But every time since I got into this business in Lansing in 74, I got a chance to meet one of my boyhood baseball card heroes. It was a thrill for me. And I have never had the pleasure of meeting Jake Wood in my life or even having spoken to him before. He was a rookie with the Tigers, second baseman in 1961. I remember when he led the American League in triples his rookie year with 14. And it's just he played for the Tigers between 61 and 67. He's now 83 years old. He has moved down to Florida from his native Elizabeth, New Jersey. And Jake, I read somewhere, welcome to the show, that you're still playing softball someplace. Is that true?
That's true, yeah. I'm a matter of fact. Yesterday when Denny called me, I was at a tournament because, you know, we were taking batting practice. And believe me, I am blessed because I'm on a 80 and above team. And, you know, we play and the fact that, you know, we're out there and we have to remind ourselves, because I wish somebody would, you know, just film senior softball and listen to what we say to one another. Now, these are 80-year-old guys with, you know, knee operations, heart attacks, and things like that. But the funny thing about it is what we say to one another. It is hilarious. But the fact that we're there, and I have to remind us that it is a absolute blessing to be, you know, like, you know, from a child to this age, a blessing.
Jake, give us an idea of what you say to each other, please.
You know, I laugh, you know, because when you look at a major league field, they have three outfielders, a huge amount of territory to cover.
Yeah.
And when the ball is in the air, if it stays in the park, those guys usually catch it. When you play senior softball, we have four and five guys lined up in the outfield and balls are falling everywhere. I mean, I'm giving deep, short, whatever. And we laugh. How come you didn't get that? How come you? It is absolutely funny.
But hey, and
again,
second base?
I remind each other, you know, we got to say we are blessed to be there. And through this game of baseball, I look back and what it's meant to me as a person, as far as the ability to travel throughout the United States, the people that you come in contact with, because if it wasn't for the game of baseball, I wouldn't even be on this radio show. And meeting guys like Denny McClain, like Al Kaline, Willie Horton, Gates Brown, guys that, you know, that the relationship that you establish, plus the fact baseball to me is a life learning experience, because you fail more than you succeed to be a good hitter. What you get three hits out of 10, and how we interact with one another, because I guarantee you, you know, guys make mistakes, like we do in life and how we, you know, respond to one another. And that's what I mean about life experience. And I thank God for what? The game of baseball. Jake, I thank God for what? The game of softball.
Jake, do you ever have to tell the hitter or the guy who hits the ball, do you ever tell him which way he's got to go?
Oh, yeah. Or you got to run, you know, when you're on first base and the guy hits the ground ball, you don't stay there.
Jake, you're 83 years old and you're still running and you're not playing second base. You're playing outfield.
No, not me. No. No, sometimes they put me at second. Sometimes I play first. Sometimes I catch if we, you know, we don't have anybody too. But, you know, it's not like catching in the big leagues, you know. Softball, you know, it bounces and you pick it up.
But, Jake, with an 80 and over league, do you have 9 players that can show up every game?
Oh, yeah. Ten. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it is an absolute joy because when you're on an 80-year-old team, you know, you don't get, you know, there's no way in the world you can get an 80-year-old team in a local, area. So, you know, they're from all over. And I'm telling you, the team that we have, we're rated, what, a major plus team. That means that, you know, we have guys that are efficient at every position. And I'm telling you, if you ever watch what our team play, they can play. Believe me.
That's funny. This is Fred, Jake, and like Bob, I grew up in Detroit, and I was born in 1957, so you represent like one of my first memories of baseball in the early 60s, and I haven't met you, but I have met and befriended your friend Willie Horton, who just raves about his friendship with you, and even though Willie was the great player, and you did not have his kind of career, he kind of idolizes you. You and Willie are very, very close, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We stay in constant contact with one another because I remember, you know, when I first met Willie, you know, the Tigers had a winter instructional league. And I think it was either in 1962 or 63. And I went down there and there was a bat laying on the ground and I picked it up and I said, my God, the thing felt like a telephone pole. And I said, whose bat is this? He said, that guy out there in left field, his name is Willie Horton. And from then on, he would have no conflict with me because he was big and strong. No, he wasn't tall, but he was strong as an ox. And the fact that, you know, he was at that young age, he was a humble young man. And even now, he's a humble, you know, mature man. And the fact that, you know, he exemplifies what I call, you know, somebody who cares about other people because of the things he gets involved in. And you know, we look back at our upbringing. You know, he came from, you know, a little town in West Virginia. It goes to Detroit, you know, becomes a hero, but he is still what, a humble gentleman.
And I want you to confess to the truth now. I'm going to ask you a bad question. You hear?
I'm here.
Okay, now tell everybody listening to this show how many times you cheated. You and Willie cheated me in the poker game.
No, we didn't have to cheat because you couldn't play cards.
You took his money, didn't you, Jake?
We grew up in an era, you know, where cards was a means of support for me. I don't know what it was. It might have been fun for you, but...
Denny broke in 63, and you got to know him then. But for us who kids growing up in Detroit in that era, our ball club was the great 1961 Tigers. Frank Leary, Norm Cash, Colavito, K-Line, you at second base. Tell us what it was like to play on that ball club, which never qualified for the postseason because that was the Yankees year of Maris and Mantle and Whitey.
I look at that team as being, you know, so exceptional because, like you said, we won, what, over 100? I think we won 101 games.
Yep,
we
did.
And we finished, what, about 8.5 games behind the Yankees. Yep. And growing up in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and I was a Dodger fan. But, you know, the Yankees used to win, you know, like every year. And I couldn't imagine any team that, you know, could dominate a sport like, you know, like the Boston Celtics or the Yankees or whatever. But once you went out on the field and you played against the Yankees, they knew the game, how to, you know, what to do, how to do it, and when to do it, no matter who was up. If it was Elson Howard, Moose Cowan, Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, Bobby Richardson, whomever, they what played means. The game of baseball. And that's what you try to instill in young people. What, you know, you got to know the game, both sides, what, defensive and offensive, what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And that's what they did. They were perfectionists at what? The game of baseball. And that's what I admired about them. Yeah, we won 101 games, but they were just better.
You know, Jake, by the late 60s, the Yankees became less than mediocre. They were very average, and the Tigers became world champions. And while your career after a cup of coffee with Cincinnati ended in 66 or 67, the kids you grew up with in that organization, Freehand, Lowledge, Stanley, Northrup, McAuliffe, Horton, Gates, Brown, they became world champions in 1968, and you watched from a distance. What was that like for you? Now, you watched these kids grow up, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I, you know, like, once you become a teammate for anybody, you know, even though you may not be there, you wish them and the organization well. Because, you know, I thank God for, you know, the Detroit Tigers, you know, for giving me the opportunity to be what? A Major League Baseball player. Because, you know, prior to that, you know, it wasn't the norm for what? An African American, what? To be participating in Major League Baseball. So that's why I am so thankful for guys that came before me, like what? Jackie Robinson opened the door. Roy Campanellas and the Hank Aarons and the Ernie Banks and guys of that nature. So when I got that opportunity, and even though I was not there in 1968 when they won, my heart was out for them. And, you know, I just thank God, you know, that they did win.
You grew up in a racially integrated neighborhood in New Jersey. You were not used to racism. You had a two-parent household. Now you signed to play pro ball. 1958, you're playing for Durham in the Tigers organization in North Carolina. And 59, you played in the old Sally League for Knoxville. What was it like for you as an African-American player to be down in the racist South in that era?
Well, my first experience, you know, like you said, I grew up in a integrated neighborhood, and you know, the environment that was created for me, you know, in New Jersey, you know, maybe racism existed, but you know, it didn't affect me, because as a child, you know, you just go out and you just play with whomever. And then my first experience going to Lakeland, Florida in 1957 and experiencing, you know, racism was like a culture shock to me. I mean, I just couldn't understand, you know, why we couldn't, as African Americans, go to certain parts of the town or go in a restaurant or a movie or even, you know, interact with the guys, you know, outside of what? Tiger Town. And it was a shock, you know, when you leave Tiger Town, and we had to, we traveled to my first year to Erie, Pennsylvania, in a school bus, and the guys, the Caucasian guys, would go to a hotel, and me and a guy by the name of Jim Branch, we had to live, you know, in some black lady's home. And then, you know, you couldn't go, you know, somebody had to, if they stopped, you know, to get a meal, somebody had to, you know, bring us a sandwich because we couldn't go in there. So it was a shock, just like to me, just like some of the other guys that, you know, didn't experience that type of atmosphere. So, and then, you know, even I didn't even understand, you know, the race relationships in Detroit.
Sure.
Till 1967. And then I just could not understand it. And then I start reading some history about some of the things that occurred, you know, throughout the United States. that people, you know, I still cannot understand how we can be so adamant or so, I don't know, just about somebody's color of their skin.
Yeah, the divisiveness that was driven. You're absolutely right. Tell me this.
Yes.
Two real quick questions. Number one, how much of a bonus did you get when you signed your contract? And what player made the biggest impression on you besides me?
a bonus. Wait a minute. How do you spell that? What does that mean? Bonus. Are you kidding?
Did they give you any money at all?
No. Heck no. Wow. I look back and I laugh because like my first salary with in Erie in Class B ball back in 1957 was $175 a month.
Oh my
and
God!
I'm thinking, divide that by four. You know, like I guess every 2 weeks they would pay you. How did I live?
Well, you played cards with me. That's how.
Yeah.
No. So, but
you were 6'1" and 163 pounds. Denny and I have had lunch together that was more than that. it wasn't necessarily the big man's game then that it is now, but were you intimidated at all by playing against Mickey Mantle and people like that?
No, I mean, I never considered, you know, my size or weight, but, you know, the fact that sometimes, you know, like as a young man growing up and you, idolizing these guys, you know, like from the Dodgers, Gil Hodges, Duke Snyder, Roy Campanella and the Yankees with Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford. And then when you actually, you know, you're standing out on the field with these same guys. And that was a joy to me. But then you come to realize, you know, they are human beings just like you with a talent, you know, that God gave them. And sometimes, you know, as fans, you know, sometimes, you know, we put athletes in another classification, you know, and people want to make them into what? Godly figures. But they're people. They're human beings, you know, that have emotions, you know, just like you and I. So, you know, when you look at them, you know, and they start talking to you, wow, I didn't know they are good human beings. And then, you know, through the game of baseball, like I say, you know, you fail probably as a hitter, I know, more than you succeed. So the emotional effect that the game has on people, You don't know how guys accept the fact that, you know, you can go 0 for 20 real quick. Mm-hmm. You can make an error, you know, that costs a game. How do you and your teammates, you know, how does that affect you as a person? And that's what I learned about the game of baseball. So, you know, like young children, you try to, you know, to them, it should be fun right now. If they want to, you know, continue, that's a different story, okay?
Hey, Jake, speaking of young children, the reason you're a Dodger fan is obvious. You were 9 years old in 1947 when Jackie Robinson signed with the Dodgers. Do you remember him signing? What did that mean to you? And I know you must have spent time with Jackie over the years. What was he like?
I never met him, you know, personally.
Really?
But
really?
I sent him a request for an autograph, you know, which I did get. But the fact, the main thing that resonates in my mind about what Jackie Robinson had, you know, to accomplish, not only on the field, but I look at his wife, Rachel.
Yeah.
And that's a person whom I call a soulmate. Because, you know, emotionally, the fact that, you know, a guy like him who was a competitor, a fierce competitor out on the field, and he couldn't, you know, he had to withhold his emotions because he couldn't, you know, fight back. And I look at the support that man had to have from his wife to do and accomplish what he did. And that's why I say, you know, not only him who accomplished what he did, but without his wife, Rachel, by his side, because I cannot imagine what he went through on the field and then had to go home. Because if it was worse there, he wouldn't have the opportunity to succeed. So I'll always say, you know, God bless her and him for what both of them accomplished for guys like me to be a major league baseball player.
Yeah, and he broke in the late 40s, Jake, and Willie has told me that the story of how he was dropped off in Lakeland, and he was 4 miles from the ballpark from Tiger Town,
right.
And he couldn't get a ride. He had to walk 4 miles to Tiger Town. He couldn't get a ride because he was a black man. And my goodness, the restrooms were labeled coloreds and whites. I mean, people today can't even imagine that, but that's the way it was, wasn't it?
Right, and then you know, like some of the stores that you could, they allowed you in. You had to go in what, the back door.
Unbelievable,
you know. And it's just like Willie said, because you know, like after practice, you know, there was a bus that used to take guys into town, into Lakeland, and they would drop, you know, the African Americans off at a certain point. And then, you know, at night, you know, when the bus came back, if you weren't there at a particular time, you know, you had, like Willie said, you had to walk to Tiger Town. And that's what we did, you know, me and the few guys, you know, that was in the organization. So we would walk back, you know, in the dark to Tiger Town, you know, through those orange groves and things of that nature, not fully understanding, you know, the possibility of, you know, interacting with somebody or whatever. But, you know, you look back and you say, why? And that's why, again, I go back to the game of baseball and all the personalities that you have on a team, but you have a goal in mind and you become what, unified. And you utilize, you know, all of the talent that you have on their team to win games. And that's why, you know, it just amazes me when we're in the society that we live in, all of the talent that we have, all of the talent, if we would just unify ourselves, utilize that talent and don't look at the person's skin, what religion they are, how much education they got or don't have or where they live, and utilize the talent that we have. Can you imagine the society that we could be living in?
Yeah, can you imagine?
A joyous one.
Yeah, the other thing too is I'll never forget, and I've told this story once or twice before, but the first time I went down south from Chicago, and I grew up in the south side of Chicago, a pretty tough area, and went to Mount Carmel High School. And the first time they sent me to the minor leagues, I went to Knoxville, Tennessee. And the first time that I ever saw this was when they let Willie, and I don't know who the other guy was, but it was two black guys.
Maybe Bubba Morton, right?
Could have been Bubba Morton. Yeah. But it was two or three black guys that were left out at a rooming house. Literally a house that somebody was allowing you guys to use the beds in there. And I was never more shocked in my life because, my Lord, I grew up in the south side of Chicago. And I mean, we had, as my mother used to say, well, you know, let all your friends in. And we did all the time. And to see the way you guys were treated in the minor leagues, I mean, this was, like you said, this was baseball. This wasn't a war. This wasn't somebody trying to get even with somebody. This was baseball. Yeah. And lo and behold, it was always shocking to me whenever we had to do that, because then we'd have to drop you off that night and everybody would be worried about you, but nobody did much about it.
Right. You know, like one year when I played in in Idaho Falls, Idaho, I remember in 1958. One of the guys that was on our team was from South Carolina. And, you know, like after the games, you know, we used to get together, you know, have a beer, play cards and whatever. And during the winter, you know, he called me and he said, I want to thank you guys for how you treated me. This is a, you know, a white guy. And I'm saying, what are you talking about? How we treated you? You were our teammate. But then it came to the realization that, you know, he explained to me that, you know, growing up in South Carolina, he never had any contact, you know, with an African American. Sure. And what he was taught, you know, was, you know, negative, just there, that, this way. And we were totally what? Different. He was our teammate. And he said, you know, he wanted to thank us for the way we treat. I said, what do you mean the way we treated you? You were our teammate. And I came to the realization that, you know, as a child, any child, you know, what do you know when you were born into this world? Absolutely nothing is what we're taught. Now, if someone teaches someone that you're superior and then teaches somebody else that they're inferior, you know, then we have what? A social problem. Everybody, to me, you know, you're everybody special. There's something special about what? Everybody.
Everybody.
Okay?
Yeah.
Everybody. So, you know, these children, when you see a bunch of children and you put them out together, they don't look at people's skin or whatever. All they do is what? They just play. And then when they get a certain age, they start what? Dividing because of what? What they are taught.
Now, this is my last question for you, Jake. Did you ever have any transactions with Mr. Jim Campbell? I want to hear this one.
No, Jim Campbell, you just say, I never, you know, you're like, I mean, I laugh because when you, like now, I don't know what a contract would look at, you know, look like now, but you know, like when I signed with the Tigers, you know, it was what, one sheet of paper.
Yeah,
either you signed it, one sheet of paper, you know, there was no negotiation, not on my part. No. And I would look, and I said, holy smokes, you know. But I had no what financial knowledge. I didn't have any kind of agent. I didn't have any kind of you know, experience, you know, with money. So whatever they gave me, you know, I had to what accept. And when I look back, I said, "Holy smoke! I don't know if they cheated me or what, but I know I didn't make any money." But that's, to me, that's not the important. Now, I just look back, and again, I just say thank God for that opportunity to be a member of the greatest fraternity that's on this earth, and that's the professional baseball player. For the guys that I come in contact with, the relationships, you know, that have been established, because I got a picture of a guy that I started out in 1957, a guy by the name of Ted Brazink. We were teenagers then. Now we're still in contact with each other. And we were great grandfathers through what? Wow. The game of baseball. And I remember, you know, when he married, and I was in Durham, North Carolina, he married this young, beautiful young lady by the name of Barbara. And when we coming out of the ballpark in Durham, North Carolina, 1958, she runs up to me, puts her arms around me. Oh, Jake, Jake, Jake. I said, Barbara, don't do that. You want to get me killed?
Your first manager, I should look it up. I'm going to say it's Bob Scheffing. Is that right?
No,
Bob Scheffing, yes.
Yeah,
he was your first manager in baseball, and then you also played for Charlie Dressen, right?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
What kind of manager was Scheffing?
He was a cool guy. You know, he didn't say a lot.
Right.
And, you know, our interaction, you know, was minimal, but calm guy, you know, never, you know, frustrated, angry, or cussing, anything like that. You know, I think we had a good relationship, you know, like the team that we had, you know, and then when you leave St. Training, you know, he just allowed us to get out there, what, play the game.
That's all. That's all Bob wanted.
That's what he did. Yeah.
Everybody to play the game the right way.
That's yeah. Jake, I got one more for you. Right. We could spend 2 hours talking with you today. We really could. But obviously so many changes in the game of baseball since your era, one of which has been the gravitation of so many African-American kids to basketball and football instead of baseball. What do you think about that? And do you like the game of baseball today as it is now?
Well, you know, that's been a concern of mine, because when you go, I don't care what part of the country you go in, and you see all these, empty baseball fields and nobody, you know, especially in the urban areas, nobody playing.
Sure.
And then you look at the fact that, you know, it's kind of costly right now for a guy to play baseball and to get, 9 or 10 or 12 guys on a team is almost impossible.
Yep.
Okay, because when you get a basketball, all you need is one basketball. You can get 5 guys and it costs them nothing. When you look at baseball, they got, you know, especially when they have these travel teams and things like that, and then, you know, I start questioning the fact that the cost. I mean, you know, like a bat that's a foot long costs $150. A glove, a uniform, just to play, they have to pay a fee. When I was playing, it was absolutely costless, free, nothing, because it was sponsored by the PAL. They had organizations, you know, when you get out there and played, they give you a cap and they give you a t-shirt and you played. Yeah. Now, everybody's in uniform. You got to pay for the uniform. Little kid, you know, a foot tall. And every year you got to pay. It is a costly sport. They don't have, you know, what is travel ball and all these organizations? Every week they got a tournament that these kids got to go to. It costs. How many people, you know, with a single parent or even with two parents can afford that? It's almost impossible. They have, I understand, you know, that some organizations have camps, you know, just like in the Dominican Republic and wherever, you know, to introduce baseball to the Spanish. Why can't they do it here?
Jake, do you like baseball today? Everybody's complaining about guys either hit home runs or strikeouts. What do you think of the current state of the game?
I mean, it's a different type of game, you know. Right now, I think the guys they're bigger, they're stronger, they're more athletic, you know. But you know, as far as the game itself, it's changed. Yeah, they, you know, the guys get up there and they're talking about angles, you know, where you hit the ball over the fence. But so it's changed. Because I don't see anybody bunting. I don't see anybody, you know, hitting, running. I don't see them doing that, you know.
They don't even steal bases anymore, Jake, what you did with proficiency. They don't even steal bases anymore.
And I'll tell you something else they don't do. They don't hit cutoff very well anymore.
Yeah, it's a different game and how, you know, organizations, you know, succumb to this, I couldn't tell you. You know, when you look out there right now and they got a shift on and there's nobody, you're a left-handed hitter and there's nobody on the other side of the field. I mean, come on, but that's the way they play.
Yeah.
Hey, Jake, thanks so much. It's just for Fred and for me, who grew up idolizing any Detroit Tiger with a picture on a baseball card. And I remember your career so well. It was just, it was really, really nice to talk to today, Jake. Thanks.
And Jake, send me some of that money back.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure, guys. You know, and it's a joy. And God bless you guys and keep up the good work, okay?
Thanks, Jake. Have a great day.
To you too, Jake. To you too. Bye-bye.
Hey, I did want to add this. We didn't have a chance to talk to him about this, but I want to say, because a lot of people are wondering. In 1964, I remember it so well when the Tigers traded my hero, Rocky Colavito, to Kansas City, and they got Jerry Lumpy back, with whom you played, Denny.
Yep.
And Lumpy took Jake's job.
Yeah, he did.
And he became a utility infielder after that. And I read an interview with Jake where he said after that he just kind of lost his confidence. So he didn't play that long in the big leagues. As Fred said, he was done after 67.
Less Who's than that? A year Ted, after the Tigers.
Are you talking Lumpy or
Jake? Talking about Jake Wood.
Lumpy took his job. Lumpy took his job.
Yeah. One quick story about Jerry Lumpy. The last out in 1960, I don't know what year it was, 3, 4, 5, whatever it was, when Jerry Lumpy was there for the last time. The last out of the season. Now, this is the last out of the season. The ball did not go 50 feet in the air, and it hit Jerry right in the nose.
Really?
Yeah, honest to God. No one had ever seen it before. And, you know, he was a hell of a defensive player.
Yeah.
But, man, I tend to hit him right in the schnoz, boy. I tell you.
Yeah. Hey, Denny, thanks for setting Jake up for us. Really enjoyed that. Have a good weekend, you guys. And we'll talk to everybody on Monday. Thanks for joining us. Eli will be back. And you have a great weekend, too, out
good
there.
Thing, too. Jake was pretty sharp, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, 83. Are you kidding me?
We should be so lucky. That's what amazed me. And he's playing football. Unreal. Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.